Exactly. Luckily, I've had some amazing people along the way who have guided me through it. We are definitely not alone in this.
Hi, I'm Jessica Marquardt, and this is Kaleidoscope, the podcast on cortical visual impairment. Cindy Yunin is my guest on this episode. She's mom to Valentina, who's now about 18 months old and has CVI. Cindy is the founder of CVIJourney.com, and she's a student again, studying early childhood development. We spoke a couple of months ago in the midst of stay-at-home orders, and I'm just getting to share the conversation with you. Aside from the details of her personal journey, she and I did talk about some of the challenges and silver linings of this isolated, quieter lifestyle we've all had to adopt due to the pandemic. But before we dig in, I want you to know I recognize many of you are suffering right now. Anyone out there having a hard time coping? I am. Honestly, I'm really hard to live with right now. Anyone out there agonizing over the back-to-school decision? Me too. We all have additional worries these days, as if it didn't feel like we had enough on our shoulders already. So I'm hoping this episode is a bright spot for you today. I think you'll find Cindy's positivity to be really contagious. I did. So here's her story. Cindy, you're here.
How are you?
I am fine. Just living through the quarantine. How are you?
Same. Yeah, it's just the weirdest thing, isn't it?
It is so strange. Although tonight I'm looking forward to something that our neighborhood has started to do, which is gather for live music. We have neighbors who are in the symphony, in the North Carolina Symphony, and they have been doing concerts in their driveway with pops and classical and some Celtic music. And then I have another neighbor who was in a pretty popular band in the 90s. They opened for like Hootie and the Blowfish and some other well-known bands. And so he'll bring his guitar out and he'll take requests.
Which so freaking neat.
So now my neighbors know my karaoke personality. Oh, and I'm like, I have to move away now.
Oh, that's awesome.
What have you been doing to entertain yourselves?
Well, entertainment. Okay, let's see. Let's really see here. You know, I did start a degree, so that takes up a lot of my time. And then Valentina is still a baby, so she takes up most of the day. She's my entertainment. Yeah, every day is so fun with her.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that baby time and how it is a little bit like quarantine anyway, especially when they're really young, because you're just following their needs and their schedule and you're not getting out very much, or at least I didn't. I mean, people had to drag me out of the house.
Exactly. You know, I can't say I'm hating staying indoors. I can't. All of her appointments have been canceled. And so,
kind of a relief not to have a lot of appointments.
It really is. And I think she's benefiting from it too, because we have time to do all of the therapy and all of the suggestions that therapists have given us over the last year. We have time to do them. We have time to put them in place. And so, you know, she's on her tummy more and she's getting up, you know, she's like rolling all over the place. Aww. It's the craziest thing. And I just don't know if that would be the case today if she was constantly in a car seat or in a stroller.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, there are trade-offs, right? I mean, we want to be good parents and take them all to all the appointments that have been deemed necessary, but having that free space and time to work on things is super beneficial.
Totally.
So,
totally.
How old is she now?
She is going on to 17 months.
Okay.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, time just goes by so fast. I can't believe it. Yeah. And with this quarantine, I find that the hours and the days and the weeks, they're all blending into each other.
They are. It is getting a little confusing.
It is. It is.
Yeah, so has it been hard being cooped up together with
without a lot of opportunity to get out on your own?
There have been some things that have been hard and some things that have been easy. So as you know, we move around a lot and we are actually staying in a temporary condo because our place in Toronto is still in development. It was supposed to be ready in September. So we thought that we would only have to stay in this temporary condo, which is, it's around 350 square feet for, you know, a couple of months. And we thought that we'd be outside. I mean, it's summer, right?
Yeah.
But it didn't play out that way. So what it actually looks like is us waking up, you know, my husband and I and Valentina waking up in this tiny, tiny place, and we don't really have our own space. So that's been difficult, but things that have been, you know, really great. You know, I get to spend so much time every waking second with Valentina, and I love that. I just love that. So, yeah.
So when did you decide to move to Toronto permanently? Because you were living in
three different places. Well, yeah, we were. And I'm Canadian and I grew up here in Canada, and this is really home to me. Victor is from Mexico. His family is there. So that's one of the reasons why we spend a little bit of time there. But Valentina, she will eventually need a routine and consistency. Canada is considered a very accessible place for people with disabilities and with special needs. And they have, you know, a really, really great medical system. And so we knew that this is the place where we want to be for our daughter, right? She will have some challenges, and Toronto's a really great place. So that's why we have decided to move here sooner and stay here. And I can actually say we've been living here. This is our home base, but we move around quite a bit.
I'd like you to first share your journey up to Valentina's birth. So first of all, tell us what you knew about Valentina before she was born.
Well, Valentina was born full term, and we found out about her complications when she was around 26 weeks in utero. We learned about her complications by fluke, and I'll tell you more about them in a minute. But in the time leading up to us finding out about them, you know, Jessica, I felt like the pregnancy was going very well. I was feeling good. I was eating nutritious meals. I wasn't stressed. And there really were no indicators that there could be anything wrong with the pregnancy at all. I was fatigued, but it was nothing unusual. And for the most part, people would ask me, hey, how's your pregnancy going? And I would say, it's going awesome. It's going really well. And I was being seen by a fantastic team of midwives because I was aiming for a natural birth. I was reading the midwifery books. I wanted to give birth without the epidural and just to really try to keep things as natural as possible. And so you can imagine that in the state of mind where I felt like I was on top of the world and where I felt like everything was perfect, it was a huge shock to my system to learn that there was actually a huge problem, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what happened was around that 26 week mark, I started to experience a little bit of pain near my right rib cage, which was really more of a nuisance, and it likely had nothing to do with the baby, but instead it could be like a common symptom of pregnancy, like, you know, acid reflux or indigestion or one of those kinds of symptoms. And my family doctor thought it could be something to do with my liver. And it actually did end up being something to do with my liver, but he really wasn't concerned at all at that point. And to play it safe, he sent me to do an ultrasound in that area of my liver. So when they were doing the ultrasound technician happened to notice that there was something wrong with the baby.
Mm.
Uh-huh. And so what she had noticed was that two of the ventricles in my daughter's brain were very enlarged. So just a quick note about the ventricles for people who don't know. There are four of them in the brain and they circulate the cerebral fluid. So if they're enlarged, it could be an indication of a blockage due to a brain bleed, infection, or something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So my midwife and the family doctor, they explained the technician's findings, and it was very clear to Victor, my husband, and I, that it was extremely serious. We learned about the news on a Friday, and as luck would have it, it was the day before our wedding. So,
oh my goodness, really?
Yeah, it was a very tough pill to swallow. It was really, really difficult.
How did you feel on your wedding day then?
That night was devastating. So the midwife and the family doctor, they called me. I was at work. And they gave me this piece of news about severe ventriculomegaly. That's what they called it. And I just remember standing in the lunchroom at work with a marker, my hand shaking and trying to write down what the midwife was telling me. And I'd never heard of it in my life, you know, like what is severe ventriculomegaly? And she said she'd really had never had somebody with that before. She didn't have experience with it, and that it was something that the hospital would have to deal with. So when we went home, and they both told us not to Google anything. They said, whatever you do, just don't Google anything. And what do you do when somebody tells you that?
Of course.
Right? So, yes. Yeah, so, you know, our wedding was so beautiful, and it was small and intimate, and it was exactly everything I had ever dreamed of. But that night, we had to make the conscious choice to choose happiness.
Yeah.
We said, everything that's waiting for us can wait until Monday, but we will never have this day back. And I think that was a very good thing we did for ourselves.
That takes a lot of willpower and intention. I'm really impressed.
Thanks. Yeah, it did take a lot of intention, but I'll tell you, our wedding vows, they meant so much more.
Yeah, right? They came to life.
They really came to life, and nobody knew why we were so emotional about them, because we didn't tell anybody that day. We kept it to ourselves until we had more information, but we just wanted everyone to be happy. Anyway, so yeah, that following Monday, I was immediately seen in the high-risk fetal unit at Mount Sinai Hospital in Toronto. And I recognize that we're so lucky to have lived within 20 minutes of that hospital, because from what I know, people fly across the country to see the doctors there because they're some of the best in the world. And they got right down to business, and we learned that our daughter had suffered a grade 4 intraventricular hemorrhage, as I had just mentioned. And it's the most severe kind of a brain bleed on the scale from 1 to 4, because it involves the brain tissue around the ventricles. Now, they couldn't identify why this happened, and they told us it was rare to see something like this in utero.
And then what did they indicate you should do next?
I'll tell you a short story. So the day I was at that high-risk fetal unit and I learned about the complication, they very gently and very respectfully asked us if we wanted to continue with the pregnancy.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. Honestly, like, no matter how gently they asked this question, I really felt like I was kicked in the stomach. I have to say, like, that fear I felt in that moment was just, it was something I'll never forget. So
did it, you feel like it intensified your fear because they had low expectations of what a quality of life could be like for Valentina and the things that you'd have to do for her as parents?
I for sure, I feel like it intensified the fear, but not for those reasons.
Okay.
They didn't make me feel like she was going to have a low quality of life. They told me the fact, which was that she would likely suffer motor issues, and they didn't know what else. But I think my fear came from realizing that for them to ask me this, it was an incredibly serious situation. And you know, that no matter which choice I made, it was only me that could make that very difficult choice. And that was a very hard thing to wrap my head around. So like I said, I was 26 weeks pregnant, and I always thought I'd be busy doing, taking prenatal yoga classes or something, not having conversations with doctors about this kind of stuff.
Yeah. And you have to grieve that too, right? That all your expectations of how it was going to be have been flipped.
Exactly, because you have these ideas in your mind of what something is going to be like. And it starts from before you get pregnant. It starts from before you have a family. You know, you envision the crib and the rocking chair and the photos hanging on the wall and the story time. But there are things you don't envision, right? And mm-hmm. you don't envision having a baby and having to be monitored closely in the hospital for weeks and being worried about things like seizures or, you know, a lot of these other scary things that parents experience. So
if parents were really honest with others about how difficult and scary it is to take on that role, no one else would have children.
It's true, right?
So if you could go back in time as a friend to yourself, what advice or comfort would you give a pregnant Cindy?
I have so much I would tell a pregnant Cindy. So first of all, I would give myself a huge hug, and I would tell myself to just hang in there, because I would be so in love with my beautiful daughter that she would be the most important thing in my life, and that I would feel more purpose and love than I could have ever imagined was possible.
That's beautiful. And she is a sweetie. I mean, when you had her in your arms at the Perkins CVI symposium last summer, everyone wanted a piece of that baby to coo at her and eyes at her. She's sweet.
I am obsessed with her. Victor is obsessed with her. She is very sweet. She must get it from Victor. Ah.
All right. So tell us about Valentina's birth and then the early days of her life. So we had alluded a little bit to your living situation. You were kind of jet setters, living in Europe and then spending lots of time with family in Canada and Mexico. So what was that like? And what were the early days of her life like?
I'll start by saying that when Victor and I met more than 5 years ago, we really bonded over our love for traveling. We've always been so passionate about seeing the world. And actually, when I'd met him, he'd already traveled to more than 50 countries. So I knew, I knew he was the right guy for me. And we'd traveled to Vietnam, to Japan, Turkey. We traveled all across Europe, Iceland, you know, a lot of those places. And so, like I said, Victor's from Mexico, and that's why we spent a lot of time there. And Canada's our home base. But while Canada is where we live, we tend to spend a lot of time overseas for some of Victor's work projects. Now, prior to Valentina's birth and finding out about these complications that she had, we had a plan of our own. We wanted to travel to Mexico and then to Europe 2 months after her birth. I figured that 2 months would give me enough time to rest and recover. My friends thought I was crazy. They had an idea, right? This was prior to knowing about any of the complications. But like I had no idea what life had in store for us, right? And when we found out about her complications, we obviously put our travel plans on hold just to see how that story would unfold. And so the early days of her life were a whirlwind. I gave birth at Mount Sinai Hospital. I had a C-section, and within 2 days, Valentina was transferred to SickKids Hospital in Toronto. And we were lucky because we were able to stay right by her side the entire time. And the staff there was super, super amazing. And they worked very hard to make us comfortable, to keep us informed, to ease our worries. Despite that, it was still difficult to be in a hospital. But when they confirmed that she was stable, they sent us home to be first-time parents of a newborn. And we had to learn how to do that too. And after 4 weeks of being at home, we realized that her head was jumping in size. So we took her back to ER at SickKids Hospital. And they monitored her for a few days. And ultimately, they decided that she'd have a shunt placed. That brings up all sorts of questions about travel. But the surgery itself went very well and it happened really fast. I mean, I was in that waiting room. I sent a couple of text messages. I watched something on the news. And before I knew it, Victor was messaging me saying, she's done, right? And it was crazy. And she recovered very quickly from it. So the big decision that we were faced with was, could we continue to travel for work and leisure when our daughter has a shunt?
Well, I remember you saying when we were in Boston for the symposium, and you know, your healthcare plan is based in Canada, that if something were to happen to her shunt while you were attending this conference, you would go back to Canada rather than going to any of the hospitals in Boston because of the cost.
Right. I mean, at the time we had crunch numbers to see what that cost would be in the US. And I think it was a little bit crazy. Now, if we were to really be there in the moment and have to make a real decision, I'm not really sure we would jump on a plane with knowing that she has a shunt failure, right? And I don't think any neurosurgeon would recommend that. But yeah, it is an important point you're drawing, which is that in Canada, we would pay nothing. She had her shunt placed. We paid nothing at that time. Wow. We left the hospital and that was that. If her shunt fails while we're overseas, well, that could have its consequences financially, right? Depending on where we are. So we really had to think hard about it. And we decided that, yes, we would be comfortable with it as long as we always, always have a solid plan about what to do if her shunt ever fails.
Right.
Because, as you know, they can fail any time, right? There's no telling when a shunt will fail. So there's that. We also wanted to have a plan in place for her physiotherapy. And yeah, to answer your question, since she's been born, we've traveled to Mexico, to Europe. We've traveled to the UK and the US for some of her therapies. And we'll consider traveling to more places in the future. For example, there are some therapies in Chile and in Brazil we might to explore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, we plan to sit still once Valentina starts preschool because we want her to have that consistent routine.
Right. Mm-hmm. So how did you find out that she had CVI?
So while we were investigating Valentina's complications while she was in utero, the head of the prenatal diagnosis and medical genetics program at Mount Sinai, he's a brilliant man. He mentioned that there was the possibility that she'd have a brain-based visual impairment. He didn't mention the term cortical visual impairment, but he did mention that if she did have a visual impairment, it would be brain-based. So this was something my husband kept at the back of his mind. I wanted to forget all about it, right? He said that.
Yeah, you're like, I have enough to think about.
He said that, exactly. I literally was terrified. I Googled how to raise a blind child, because this is what I do. If I am uncertain and afraid of something, I just dive into learning about it head first, right? And
yeah,
and it was
knowledge is power. It's good to gather it up.
It is. And anyways, so as she approached her second month of life, I thought she was making eye contact with me when the reality is she wasn't. And her pediatrician, it's funny what moms, you know, us moms will tell ourselves, right? Like, she is making eye contact with me. What are you talking about? Right? Like, she's looking.
I also think it's kind of difficult when you get into a clinic and a doctor's asking you a bunch of questions about whether your child does this or does that or does not do this. I think just because you're so accustomed to the way your child is. And I know, I mean, with Grace being my oldest and the one who has CVI, did not have anything to compare, you know, her development to, made it just harder to tease out that something was wrong.
Exactly. That's huge. I mean, if you haven't had a child before, it's very difficult to spot when something is not, when something's amiss, right? You have nothing to compare it to, especially if, you know, you don't have experience with other children. Yeah, so her pediatrician, he'd asked us if Valentina was tracking objects, and he asked us other questions. It slowly dawned on me that she was behind in terms of visual development. I think to me this was even scarier than her having a shunt, which is, you know, a lifelong thing.
Really? Why do you say that?
Because I just knew nothing about visual impairments. Nothing at all. And I almost, like, I feel sad to say that, right? There's a whole world out there of people who have visual impairments. And I just didn't know how I could be a good mom with no experience in something. And this something is a very big thing that will impact every aspect of her life. And every parent wants to connect with their child. Every parent wants to understand their child and be the most helpful they can be to their child. But I really felt like I would be a failure at it. Right? Like, I didn't know where to start.
Right.
I didn't know where to start. It's just, while I was pregnant, you know, rather than listening to podcasts like your amazing podcast, Kaleidoscope, I was, before knowing about her complications, I was listening to podcasts about, you know, feeding and storing milk properly.
Right.
And play and all sorts of fun things, infant massage.
Which are all still important things, but then you just, you have additional things that you have to learn and throw yourself into.
Exactly, exactly. Luckily, I've had some amazing people along the way who have guided me through it. We are definitely not alone in this. We saw her pediatrician. And he asked me these questions. And the next day we saw her neurologist. And her neurologist told us not to worry and that we should show her shiny things with lights. Okay, so you know what that means. It means I'm going to go to the store and I'm going to buy every shiny thing with lights that I can get my hands on, right? And I'm just going to like wave them in all sorts of directions. That's what that means.
So looking back on that, do you feel like that was nuanced enough advice?
Well, you know, as we know, there's so much more to CVI than just waving shiny things at these children. I cannot blame the neurologist. It was still so early. Valentina was only 2 months old at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I know often they want to rule out all sorts of other things, right?
Sure.
Yeah. And so I think we walked out of the neurologist appointment and we walked right into the neuro-ophthalmologist appointment. And this appointment was a little bit more interesting because he told us to wait and see and to come back in 8 months. And when I asked if there was anything we should be doing in the 8 months, he said that we didn't need to do anything because she was already receiving all sorts of visual stimulation. Well, I have to say, I'm so happy that Victor and I took the initiative on our own to learn and to meet the right people, because 8 months is like a lifetime.
Sure.
When it comes to early intervention. And to implement the CVI strategies, it just doesn't hurt. It's something anyone can do, and you adapt. And but to totally miss a window of time that big, if I had missed it, would have been a huge disappointment to me. So mm-hmm. yeah, like nobody mentioned CVI. My husband, he was already aware of this thing called CVI through his readings. And so he encouraged me to watch some videos by Dr. Christine Roman. I watched them. I was very reluctant to believe this. It was just maybe a defense mechanism of mine. But at the same time, my daughter was doing a therapy called the Annette Benyel method and mm-hmm. Feldenkrais method. And her practice.
What was that second one you said?
Feldenkrais.
What is that?
It's based on, well, there was a man, his name is Moshe Feldenkrais, and studied and taught neuromovement. It's sort of like.
So they're both neuromovement.
Yes. Yes.
Philosophies.
Exactly. And Annette okay. Benyel actually. She was trained by Moshe Feldenkrais.
Okay.
But her practitioner, you know, mentioned this thing called, again, CVI. And, well, her name is Judith Deck, and she's at Uptown Studio. She's amazing. And she suggested that I get in touch with Surrey Place. And this is an organization that provides services through Ontario's Blind Low Vision Early Intervention Program here in Canada. Mm-hmm. And so through Surrey Place, we were extremely lucky to meet Lindsay Hillier.
Yes, yeah. Lindsay. She's our president of the Pediatric Cortical Visual Impairment Society and just such a passionate advocate for kids with CVI.
Exactly. So, I mean, think about that. We really, really fell into the right hands.
That is perfect.
At the right time. This was, again, just around 2 months of Valentina's life. So she put us in touch with our now early childhood vision consultant, Tara Tompay, and she's CVI range endorsed, and she's just been a godsend to us. So she's been guiding us along the way since. And Tara and Lindsay both felt like Valentina was exhibiting CVI characteristics, which made sense with her health history.
Sure.
And so you asked, how was she officially diagnosed? Well, she was officially diagnosed by her neuro-ophthalmologist over a year later. So she was maybe 13 months old at the time. But thankfully, we'd already started with CVI interventions when she was actually around 4 months old. But that's only because we educated ourselves and we took the initiative to meet the right people like Lindsay and like Tara. I think it would be nice for parents who have children with, a health history of a neurological condition to receive that information, to at least hear the term cortical visual impairment, because mm-hmm. there's so much online now.
Especially Perkins. Gosh, they put out such good content from a variety of sources and in all sorts of formats. And we had talked about the Perkins CVI Symposium, which we both attended in 2019. And what were the best things you took away from that experience?
Well, let's see. Okay. So to me, the symposium was kind of like that really big hug you need from a friend after you hear bad news.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I met so many wonderful parents of children who have CVI, and so many educators and professionals who really care about helping children. And I still speak to some of them today. And after attending the symposium, I was listening to the Perkins eLearning to Go podcast.
Yes.
And yeah, and they had an episode that wrapped up the symposium. You know, Valerie, who was hosting the podcast, mentioned my family and I. And she wrapped it up really nicely. And she talked about how she saw a young couple there, which was us. and and how we came to the symposium to learn as much as we could for our daughter. And she said that what she saw were leaders in the field of visual impairment, and they were talking with us at length about Valentina's condition. And they were talking to us like we were the only people in the room.
And nice.
And it was true, Jessica. You know, when people spoke to us, they really took the time to explain things. And so she also said that that we received some positive news about Valentina and her future. And that's true. Lastly, she said that she knows that together as a united voice, there's no doubt in her mind that this group will be the change. And I really, I heard this on the podcast and I couldn't agree more. For us, it's reassuring to know that there's an incredible network of people who are working extremely hard to make a difference. And we knew we had to become advocates for this very important cause.
Well, we'll find the direct link to that episode and put it in the show notes so that people can find it easily and listen for themselves. But I love how you describe the feeling of finding your people and what that's like to be surrounded by people who understand CVI, understand what you're going through, care deeply about you and Valentina and helping you find the right course of action. And opportunities like that bring together multiple disciplines and people of all walks who are stakeholders in CVI it's really wonderful to have that cross-pollination of experiences and ideas and expertise to kind of like move the needle a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. I think that's what will make a difference. And for us, it was so amazing to, again, meet the parents and parents like yourself who have older children now. And you guys have, you know, poured your hearts into paving the way for us later generations, so to speak, right?
I think it's going to get a little bit better and a little bit better for each, you know, round of kids to come.
I think so.
Let's hope.
I think so.
And you're doing your part. I mean, you've jumped onto the advocacy bandwagon really quickly. I mean, you have a blog and corresponding Instagram account called cvijourney.com. How old was Valentina when you started your blog, and why did you decide to add advocacy to your plate on top of everything else?
Sure. So Valentina was around 5 months old when I started cvijourney.com. And I really only started the Instagram accounts and the other social media accounts more recently this year. And I started them because I wanted to share all the valuable pieces of information that I learned about CVI along the way with other parents. So I've always been a huge advocate for education, and I really feel that the more educated everyone is about CVI and the more we can increase awareness about what they're calling a growing public health crisis, then the more our children with CVI will ultimately benefit.
Agreed. So tell people, like, what kind of content do you have on your blog? And what's some of your favorite things that you've written about or done?
The blog is broken up into sort of different sections. I have one section called Interactive Stories, and it's a series of simple, short children's stories that I wrote for my daughter and other children who have visual impairments. And these stories are about daily routines like bath time and breakfast time, walking outside, things like that. And I wrote some about animals too, actually. And what makes them interactive for a child who has a visual impairment are the fun sound effects. So when you're reading one of the stories to your child, you can click to play the sound effect and it correlates with the words so they can have a more enriched and interactive experience. My daughter has been a great audience and she giggles at the noises. And so because she loves them, I keep writing them. So for parents who are interested, they're available on the website, cvijourney.com.
Okay. Fun. I love story time and it's a real staple in our day to day. Grace loves listening to books and it's a great way to build the imagination and that vocabulary, and I love it. What a good idea.
Oh, thank you. And well, it was inspired by our early childhood vision consultant because we regularly go over Valentina's routine, and it was time for her to teach me about something called emergent literacy.
Okay.
And it's building the foundation for literacy. And I showed her the books that I read, Valentina, and she said, you know, Cindy, what you could do is make sound effects to go with the words. And I thought that was a pretty cool idea. And so as I would read the books, I thought, well, I wish I had a book about breakfast because Valentina hears noises during breakfast every day. And so that's what kind of sparked the idea. Yeah. And so then there's, I have something called Fireside Chats. And so that's something I recently started. And that's an initiative on my part to interview people who have deep expertise about CVI or neuroplasticity. So I've just finished working on a really incredible piece with Dr. Lotfi Mirabet.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. He's brilliant. And he's, for people who haven't met him, he's a neuroscientist and an optometrist, and he's doing a lot of research in CVI. And let's see, I've also interviewed my daughter's early childhood vision consultant, Tara Tompei. And I recently interviewed Stephanie Dusing. She's the author of a newly released book called Eyeless Mind, A Memoir for Seeing and Being Seen. And she's a mom in the U.S., who recently discovered that her 15-year-old son has CVI.
Saw your post on that, and then I added it to my reading list.
Oh, cool. Thanks, Jessica. Yeah. Well, I do think parents, TVIs, educators, and even medical professionals who read these interviews can learn a lot from these people.
Absolutely. Good for you. That's amazing. You also talk about constraint-induced movement therapy, or CIMT, on your blog, and I don't really know anything about that. Could you share about that and then how you also have made it CVI-friendly for Valentina?
Sure. So CIMT, that stands for constraint-induced movement therapy. It was developed by a man, and his name is Edward Taub. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right, but it's spelled Taub, and he's from the University of Alabama at Birmingham. And he argues that after having a stroke, the person stops using the affected limb, so whether it's an arm or a leg, and they're discouraged by the difficulty of moving it. So as a result, a process called learned non-use sets in. So it's a type of a negative feedback.
Right.
Uh-huh. And so my daughter, for example, has hemiplegia, and she really struggles to use her left arm. And so CIMT is something that could help her with that. And the American Stroke Association, they've said that CIMT is at the forefront of a revolution. So for what's possible in terms of recovery for stroke survivors. And so it's what it looks like in practice, and some places do it differently, but we did Valentina's CIMT clinic at the CIMT clinic in Manchester, UK. And it was a 1 month program. And they put a cast on her good arm. And then every day, Monday to Friday, she would have a 2-hour session. And it's a play-based session where they encourage her to use her left arm. And they they would also encourage her to eat with her left arm. So they would spread the puree of fruit on her hand and they would encourage her to bring it to her mouth.
I mean, I would have a hard time trying to feed myself with my left arm.
Me too. Me too.
Did it frustrate her?
It didn't frustrate her at all. She actually, okay, good. I had been a little bit concerned about that at the start, but she was never frustrated by it. And she did use her arm more by the end of the month. She did. She moved it around. She had more range of motion. She was bringing her left arm to her mouth to eat.
And did that team have to do anything to make the therapy visually accessible for her?
Yes, they did. So Dr. Christine Roman was very kind to take the time to speak with them about how they could make the environment and the activities CVI friendly. And they totally got it, and they did their very best to incorporate looking throughout the sessions. So, for example, there was a toy she had to spin with her left arm, and they wrapped shiny material around that toy to adapt it for CVI. They dimmed the lights so she could focus on the activity. They didn't, they held the objects in place for her so she could have a chance to look at it before interacting with it. Mm-hmm. And they did a really, really great job. And I actually tracked the day-by-day program and activities on cvijourney.com. I made sure to write how they made things CVI friendly for anybody that's interested in doing CIMT, because it's a month-long program. You don't want to put looking or, you know, this making things CVI friendly on the back seat, right?
Right.
You always want them to look first.
That's great that it sounds like she made progress with that. She's making progress being at home in quarantine. Like, tell us more about Valentina now and what she's doing, what she likes, and the different changes you've seen in her over her short little life.
Yes. Oh my goodness. I've seen so many changes in her recently. And first of all, maybe I'll go kind of category by category. So for vision, her vision seems to be improving in that she knows when something is in front of her face because she reaches out to touch it. So that is huge. We've been doing, you know, the spoon routine where you use the same red spoon for every single meal and you hold it in front of them and you wait for them to look at it and then you feed them with it. We've been doing that since she was 6 months old.
Uh-huh.
And very recently, she started to reach out, take the spoon and put it in her mouth. And Victor and I, we could not believe that it was happening when it happened. We just couldn't believe it. We had to do this over three separate meals to actually say to ourselves, she is seeing that there is a spoon in front of her face.
You're like, these little miracles.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Every single thing she does is a gift. Everything.
Yeah.
And every single thing she does brings us so much joy. So vision seems to be improving little by little, which is wonderful. And in terms of interaction, she's doing this super amazing thing where she fake laughs. She goes, ah. Yeah, she goes, ah, ha, 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 ha. And then I do it, and then she does it, and then I do it, and she does it, and it's the best fake laugh ever, right? And just recently she started to say mama.
Oh.
And she'd been saying mama for a long time, but not necessarily relating it to me.
Okay.
She says mama, and the mama over the last 2 weeks has evolved to mom, which is like, who is this kid calling me
mom?
Yeah,
that's so grown up.
It is. And so if I put her on tummy time, you know, she does really well now. And, oh, Jessica, this was another like bane of my existence. I couldn't stand the tummy time. And it's been going on for like a year.
Did she just scream through it?
Oh,
unhappy
with
it?
It was awful. Yeah. Yeah, she hated it. And I just did everything I could. And she just hated it. But over the last couple of months, again, she's gotten really good with it. And she actually enjoys being on her tummy. And this, you know, we were talking about the quarantine earlier. This quarantine has been really great because throughout the day, I have many opportunities to put her on her tummy. And I can just take her off when she's frustrated, right? And so her tummy time has now evolved into really awesome rolling. And so she's just rolling around. I put her on her tummy and she starts on one side and she ends up on the other end of the hallway. And she's
our little roly-poly.
She's a roly-poly, yeah. And she's just interested in these things that she comes across, which is really, really nice to know that she has this, you know, sense of desire to explore. And then another interesting thing is she's starting to discover different parts of her body. So, you know, as I mentioned, she's like 16 and a half months now. And she seems like she's just discovered her hair, right? So she's taking her hair and she's putting it in her mouth. And I usually put it back. But there's one day, the other day, where I really just needed a break from doing her physiotherapy routine. I do it every day, multiple times a day. And I needed a break. And I said, today we're just going to cuddle. And we're going to let your hair down, girl. And, you know, she grabbed her hair. And she was very upset because she pulled and it hurt.
Oh.
She pulled and she screamed. And I was like, well, no, honey, like, don't pull your hair. It's going to hurt. And it's like she didn't know what it was. So it's been interesting, Jessica. Yeah. Yeah, there's been a lot.
That is a nice – thank you. You painted a nice picture of what she's up to. So you mentioned that you have started a new degree. And I don't even know how you're doing all of this and finding quiet space to study and to be on a podcast episode and to keep your blog up and to tend to Valentina. But when did you enroll in that program, and what do you plan to do with your degree?
Sure. So yeah, well, first I'll say Victor is a huge help. He, you know, he takes Valentina and he does activities with her so that I get some me time. And my version of me time is really studying and that kind
of
thing. So yeah, so I chose to study marketing as my undergrad many years ago because I really enjoyed the creative aspects of it, which probably explains why I love writing, and this blog that I'm working on comes very easily to me. But I recently decided to start earning a new degree in early childhood education for a couple of reasons. So first, I really want to be the very best I can be for Valentina, right? So I'm a first-time mom with very little experience around children. And I hardly knew anything about basic things like feeding or sleeping schedules, burping, let alone developmental milestones and learning strategies for raising a child with special needs. So I think that studying ECE will help me fill in some of these very big gaps that I have. And of course, now I find the topic extremely interesting. So one day, I hope I can help families who may be facing the same struggles that I'm facing today.
It's good to have something like that we're working toward that kind of fills a passion. And
yeah, I mean, us moms and dads, it's so easy to get so wrapped up in parenting. And I constantly forget to take care of myself. But it's important. It's important that we're at least aware of it and that we try, right? We have kids, but our passion for life and our goals and, you know, all these very important things don't just go away, right? And I think it's important that we nurture them. And let me be clear, this degree will take me maybe, if I'm lucky, 5 years to complete. Like, it's not going to be done in 2 years, like you know, your average university grad. It's going to take me a really long time, but little by little, right? Little
by little. And it sounds like you're enjoying it, and it's directly applicable to your life as you know it. So
exactly. It really is. Mm-hmm.
Well, you just exude this positivity. Like, I have a huge smile on my face because I love your upbeat nature and your passion for everything you're doing for Valentina, and with your blog. And I've enjoyed this little light in my morning having this conversation. Aww. I love your positivity.
Oh, thank you, Jessica.
Thank you for sharing your story.
Well, thank you for having me. And thank you for your podcast and everything you are doing to help parents and educators and medical professionals, Jessica, because your podcast is one of the very first things that my husband and I listened to when we found out about Valentina's CVI. And we were on a long drive. It was a 3-hour drive. And we put your podcast on and we listened. And the first episode we listened to was the episode with you and your husband in the closet doing. And actually, you guys are the ones that sounded positive. You know, that was very inspiring, and it sounded like you guys, and you know, you knew what you were doing and you knew where you were going. And despite the challenges, you guys were doing a podcast and helping people. And it was so nice.
Well, you're sweet. It's easy. It's easy to be upbeat and confident from the privacy of your closet. But when you have to show your face to the real world, it gets harder. Totally recognize that. But thank you. Thank you so much. This is, the pleasure is all mine to be able to dig deep with people. So.
Oh, no, you're amazing. And don't get me wrong. I do have my bad days. I do have my struggles. I struggle with this maybe like every third day. Right?
Sure.
And that's normal, I think.
Absolutely. Yeah. It is. I mean, it's normal for it to vary widely within a day. So.
yeah, exactly.
Understood. As always, thanks for listening. Take care.